Radio Prague News.
Martina Navratilova has ended her remarkable career on a high, winning the mixed doubles at the US Open. The Czech Prime Minister has criticized a delay in the enlargement of the Schengen area, and the Minister of the Interior says the Czech Postal Service could be privatized by the start of 2008. Martina Navratilova has ended her remarkable career on a high, winning the mixed doubles at the US Open. It was her 59th Grand Slam title. The Czech-born tennis legend and partner Bob Bryan of the United States beat the Czech duo of Květa Peška and Martin Dam 6-2, 6-3 in Saturday's final. Addressing the crowd after the match, Martina Navratilova said thanks for a great ride, while her partner Bryan congratulated her on the best tennis career of all time. Navratilova is quitting the sport just a month ahead of her 50th birthday. Meanwhile, Czech player Martin Dam made amends for defeat in the mixed doubles final by winning the men's doubles with Leander Paes of India. The US Open is the first Grand Slam title for Dam, who is 34. The Czech Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has criticised the European Commission's recommendation that the opening of the Schengen zone to the new European Union 10 be delayed for at least a year. The Commission says borders should be opened to the newest members in October 2008 or later, not October 2007 as originally planned. Speaking after a meeting with his Polish counterpart Jaroslaw Kaczyński at a conference in Helsinki, Mr. Topolánek said the two leaders had agreed the mistake was completely on the part of the European Commission. The new Minister of the Interior, Ivan Langer, says Česká pošta, or Czech Post, could be transformed into a private company by the start of 2008. Mr. Langer said, as the current government is only seeking a one-year mandate, he would like to prepare the ground for a decision on the privatisation by the next cabinet. The current government, which faces a difficult vote of confidence at the start of October, plans to incorporate the Information Technology Ministry into the Interior Ministry. Finally, the weather. It should remain mostly sunny over the next few days, with temperatures of around 25 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby. You'll find more stories on our website. But for now, that's the end of the news.
You are tuned to Radio Prague and I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, our weekly session over your letters with Pavla Horáková. So if you've contacted us lately or mailed us, you may be on the show. A letter from Prague by Ian Willoughby and a fresh edition of Czech Books with David Vaughan, in which he'll be talking about the best-selling novel The People's Act of Love by James Meek. That and more on the way, so let's look at what's in the mail first.
Welcome to Mailbox. As you know, last Thursday, Radio Prague celebrated its 70th birthday. On that day, we broadcast a special programme looking back at the history of Radio Prague as well as the latest news about the station. In response to that special programme, we got many emails from our listeners. They were such a nice present for us here at Radio Prague for the anniversary, and we are proud to quote from some of them in this week's edition of Mailbox. The first one came from Jay Ham from the United States.
Hello from Georgia, suburbs of Atlanta. Happy 70th. I'm a loyal listener online and on satellite radio. Thanks for having such an interesting, witty, culturally relevant and fun news program.
Nadia Alkan, who follows us in Prague, sent us lovely photos of flowers, and Fernando Ferreira listens to Radio Prague in Portugal.
On the occasion of the 70th anniversary of Radio Prague, I should like to express my heartfelt congratulations to you all working on your station. Fernando Ferreira, a Radio Prague listener since 1963.
Christine Takaguchi-Coates follows Radio Prague in Japan, and she sent us this electronic greeting card. with very best wishes on your 70th anniversary. Looking forward to many, many more successful years ahead. And David Eldridge from England sent us this email but promised to send more.
I've written 3 reception reports on Radio Prague transmissions, 2 on the 30th of August 2006 and 1 on the 31st. In keeping with the occasion, I will send them by letter post. The reports are written on a Radio Prague Monitor Club form, a photocopy of the original form. The photocopy must have been made before the end of the 1980s, since looking closely at the copying process, it was made with technology that was obsolete by 1990.
Helmut Matt from Germany is a keen listener of Radio Prague's German and English sections programs.
Of course, I haven't forgotten your anniversary. Herewith, I want to send you my very best wishes to Radio Prague's 70th anniversary. Instead of flowers, I send you an essay which I wrote especially for you and for this event. That's my gift for you on this day. It's originally written in German, of course, for the German section of Radio Prague. As I'm also a listener of your English programs, I translated the text into English for you. Hope there aren't too many mistakes.
The essay is truly touching, and hopefully we will be able to display quotes from it on our website. And Mike Talbot from the Isle of Man wrote,
"Wishing you all at Prague Radio happy 70th birthday. Congratulations from the Isle of Man."
And Joel Straffelder listens to Radio Prague in the United States.
"Congratulations on your 70th birthday. I've been a Radio Prague listener since I found you on the internet a couple of years ago. In April, I purchased a shortwave radio with the intent of tuning in to your broadcast. I was unsuccessful. For whatever reason, I didn't get a strong reception. Perhaps it was the time of year, my location in the Midwest of America, or more likely my lack of understanding of shortwave. So I remain a regular daily listener of your English program via the internet."
And this came from Eva Pilik from Los Angeles.
"Thank you so much for a wonderful program. My mom is not well, and she was just talking about the years prior to 1938. I sat her by the computer, and she said that it brought back the ache in the heart. So many lost a way of life twice, first when Hitler occupied Czechoslovakia, and then when the communists did. I hope the younger generations listen and try to understand their grandparents and all that they had to go through in their lives."
And finally, Peter Fort listens to us in Maryland.
"I've spent the last half hour listening to your 1600 hours English language live streaming broadcast online in anticipation of traveling to Prague next week as a volunteer bone marrow courier, bringing marrow for a transplant late next week. I was especially inspired by the segment celebrating your 70th anniversary on the air with archival recordings, in particular those broadcast in August 1968. When I was a teenager in 1967 and 1968, and through much of the 70s, I listened to your shortwave broadcasts from my home in Kansas City, Missouri, USA, with exceptional interest. A vivid memory of mine was the excitement I felt searching for and listening to your broadcasts during the dark days of late August 1968, rushing to tell my parents that I'd heard your signal and attempting to record what I could of the transmission, even travelling to a local radio station to share the news of those days, direct from Prague. And now, after many years as a husband, parent and grandparent, I will finally visit Prague, albeit briefly, next week. Of course, listening to Radio Prague online is less of a challenge than it was during my high school and college days. But, busy as I am, perhaps this is a good thing. All the best on this, your 70th anniversary."
And we'd like to also thank Borja Nilsson, Eric Coy, Gautam Kumar Sharma and many others for their greetings. I'd like to quote some more, but we are almost out of time now, so let me just repeat our competition question for September. This month we would like you to tell us the name of the world-famous physicist who was born in 1838 in what is now the Czech Republic's second city of Brno and has a unit named after him which is used to define the speed of a moving object relative to the speed of sound. I hope the definition is understandable, albeit not necessarily scientifically accurate. Please send us your answers by the end of the month to english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. Till next Sunday, bye-bye.
Pavla Horáková there, and of course Pavla will be back same time next week, so do keep those letters coming. Now it's time for a letter from ourselves, or rather one from Ian Willoughby.
Though I'd say I'm reasonably familiar with Czech culture and history, I must admit that I often have to scratch my head a bit and consult the internet whenever we feature a new question in our Radio Prague monthly quiz. The subject of the most recent competition, the remarkable prize-winning tennis, ice hockey and football player Karel Koželuk, was certainly somebody I should have been familiar with, and I learned about his amazing career with fascination. Koželuk's incredible story brought to mind another intriguing Czech sportsman of yesteryear, albeit one who made his name on the international stage a decade or two later. The name Jaroslav Drobný first came to my attention a couple of years ago on a trip to London. Among many interesting Czechs I met there was the late Lady Louisa Abrahams, then in her 90s, whose list of acquaintances read like a who's who. She'd known Tomáš and Jan Masaryk, generations of the Havel family and members of the British royal family. And she said, Jaroslav Drobný, who later won Wimbledon, was her ball boy when she was a young woman in Prague. Drobný did indeed win Wimbledon, I discovered after a little research. After losing in the 1949 and 1952 finals, he finally became Wimbledon champion in 1954, apparently the first ever left-hander to win the tournament. His opponent in the gentlemen's final that day was Ken Rosewall of Australia, and heaven knows how long the match must have lasted. The score was a hard-to-believe 13-11, 4-6, 6-2, 9-7. But what's particularly fascinating is the fact Drobný won the prestigious tournament not for Czechoslovakia, but as a citizen of Egypt, of all places. After leaving Czechoslovakia in the late 1940s, he was looking for a new country, apparently deciding on Egypt after hitting it off with the chairman of the Cairo Tennis Club. Drobný seems to have later given up his Egyptian citizenship when he moved to Britain, where he died in 2001. As I say, hearing about the multi-talented Karel Koželuk lately put me in mind of Jaroslav Drobný, and I've since learned that they had something in common. Like Koželuk, he was also an ice hockey player, winning a silver medal with Czechoslovakia at the Winter Olympics of 1948. His father worked as a joiner on Prague's Štvanice, and that seems to have influenced Drobný's sporting career. On one side of the island, there was an ice hockey stadium. On the other, the country's best-known tennis arena.
That was Ian Willoughby with Letter from Prague, and now it's time to hand you over to David Vaughan for this week's edition of Czech Books. The subject this month is the best-selling novel The People's Act of Love by James Meek, which is set in Russia during the Civil War but features a host of Czech characters.
The award-winning recent novel, The People's Act of Love, by the British writer James Meek, has an amazing cast of characters. It's set in the vast isolation of Siberia in 1919. At the height of the Russian Civil War, it brings together an escapee from a prison somewhere in the far north, a small fundamentalist Christian sect who believe in castration as a liberation from this world, and a company of Czech and Slovak soldiers, marooned thousands of miles from home by the dramatic events of the time. And the backdrop is one of revolution and civil war. For James Meek, this strange constellation of events and characters was irresistible, as he told me on a phone line from London.
The unique thing about the Russian Revolution was, more than anything else, the scale of the spaces which were involved, the way in which human action was stretched out over such a vast canvas. I mean, there are such huge spaces where small communities exist linked by roads or railways over thousands of miles all over the world, but this was the only place in Russia at that time where that kind of community saw this, not just a war and not just a civil war, but a real clash of ideologies, where, to mention just one example, capitalism and communism for the very first time in the modern world came into conflict.
The true story of the Czechoslovak legions in Siberia is an intriguing part of this mosaic.
He asked Samarin if he had heard the gunshot. "I think the bullet broke a branch over there," he said, nodding at the trees. "You were lucky." As I said, you can't understand who's on which side now. The old war didn't end cleanly. There were remnants everywhere in Russia, leftovers, like the Czechs. Russia took them prisoner in the old war when they didn't have a country of their own. Now they do, and they're trying to get back to it. But they've got caught up in this new war. They're white, officially, but half of them are red. There are thousands of them all over Siberia. They've taken over the whole of the Trans-Siberian Railway. Can you imagine? None of it makes any sense.
The words in that extract come from the castrate Balashov, one of the central characters in The People's Act of Love. He and his fundamentalist Christian community are living in the small, windswept town of Jazyk, which is under the control of the Czechs and their sinister commander, Captain Matula. It is in this community that the mysterious Samarin arrives, and a complex series of events gradually unfolds as characters that are sometimes violently different are thrown together. All the while, the Red Army is drawing closer. Before we look in a bit more detail at the book itself, perhaps we should get some more insight into the unexpectedly Czech background of the story, which, as I've said, has roots in real events. The Czech writer and journalist Václav Bartuška has spent 10 years researching the involvement of what were known as the Czechoslovak legions in the Russian Revolution and the Civil War, going back to when the First World War broke out and many Czech patriots chose to fight with the Russians against Austria.
There was a huge body of Czech volunteers, or Czechoslovak volunteers, fighting against the Germans and Austro-Hungarians in the Allied countries, in France, Italy and Russia. And by far the biggest body of Czech volunteers was in Russia, in the Tsarist Russia. Close to 40,000 of them were fighting. And in 1918, in February, when Mr. Lenin, the new master of Russia, signed a peace deal with Germany in Brest. It also included a provision that there would be no enemy troops against the Central Powers, against Germany and Austro-Hungary. So the Czechoslovak troops, which were in that time stationed in Ukraine, basically very close to home, started to move alongside the railway, and it was decided by the Allies that they would go to Vladivostok and from there by sea to France, to the Western Front, to fight against the Germans on the Western Front.
In the meantime, they got entangled in the civil war in Russia, didn't they?
Well, the civil war started already in summer 1917, and by the time the Czechs started to move from Ukraine in spring 1918, there was already a huge chaos in Russia. The Czechs, being a huge army with high discipline, usually get their way. And by May 1918, they were spread alongside the railway from Ukraine to Vladivostok.
And so de facto, they controlled the entire length of the Trans-Siberian Railway?
Well, they didn't control it until July of that year. What happened was in May 1918, the Soviet leadership tried to disarm the Czechoslovak troops. And the Czechs didn't like the idea of being at mercy of Mr. Trotsky. So they started what the Russians call the Czechoslovak uprising, and they took the whole Trans-Siberian Railway from Volga to Vladivostok in less than 2 months of fighting.
And they actually clung onto it for some time, didn't they?
They kept the railway for almost 2 years.
It wasn't by chance that James Meek picked up this story in his novel.
The idea of a group of people from a world that I felt myself to be half familiar with stranded in this great wild violence based in Siberia. I say familiar partly because the Czech Republic is, of course, at the heart of Europe, but also because I love Czech writers. And of all the Eastern European countries, the Czech writers are the ones who have appealed to me most. Kundera, Kafka, Hrabal in particular. And, of course, Hašek, who not only wrote The Good Soldier Švejk, but also wrote a series of short stories which portrayed his own experiences in Russia or in the future Soviet Union on the other side, on the side of the Reds rather than the side of the Whites. So it's familiar to me both as something to do with the Czech world that I'd learned about through literature, and also because here was the Europe that I knew transplanted into Siberia. That was appealing to me.
Several of the central characters in the novel are Czech, including Lieutenant Mutz, who is Jewish and a liberal, in love with, but not quite loved by, Anna Petrovna. She's a young woman who has settled in a town with her small son, for reasons that do not immediately seem clear. Mutz is probably the most sympathetic character in the novel, and he contrasts drastically with his compatriot, Captain Matula, who heads the Czech and Slovak company, and in many ways embodies everything that Czechs like to think that they are not. He is obsessed with power and is virulently anti-Semitic.
Makula's dark eyes were set deep in his face. The skin around his eyes was lined and the flesh coarsely flayed by heat and cold, and fevers and jaundices and scurvies gone by. He had a crooked, cross-marked scar from a badly stitched wound slanting across his chin. Only his mouth had been immune to all the frosts and bloodshed of 5 years' campaigning. His lips were soft and full, red like a boy's, as if he'd put them away for safekeeping when he went into battle or in winter, as if they'd never been stretched in a yell in a charge, as if they'd never been pressed or bitten when his tongue had told men to kill captives, as if he kept them for feasts, games, and kisses. His eyes had seen it all. He was 24 years old.
You take them out into this blank sheet of paper, which Siberia was, and anything can happen. It's a kind of not so much agoraphobia as agoraphilia, where your mind just is allowed to roam over this blank space, and you can start imagining ideas of empires and dominions. It's a very dangerous thing to give a young man a gun and power when he has so few moral roots to found his ideas on.
While most of the Czech company dream of nothing but going home to their newly independent homeland, Matula has a mad vision of carving out an empire for himself in Siberia. Perhaps even more frightening is the violent revolutionary Samarin, who believes that everything, even cannibalism, can be justified in creating the brave new post-revolutionary world. Here he defends his philosophy to Anna Petrovna.
To hold such a man to the same standards as ordinary men would be strange, like putting wolves on trial for killing elk, or trying to shoot the wind. You can pity the innocent man he butchers, if he is innocent. But the fact the food comes in the form of a man is accidental damage. It's without malice. What looks like an act of evil to a single person is the people's act of love to its future self.
His is the insane and unnervingly magnetic logic of fanaticism. But James Meek insists that he is not just showing how morality collapses at moments of great social upheaval. At some points in the book, he says, the situation is quite the contrary.
I think this idea, this dichotomy between the idea of a world where order has not broken down or morality has not broken down and the idea where morality has broken down, it's not nearly as clear-cut as that. I think in those... here now in London, where I'm talking to you from in 2006, there are plenty of families, groups, people where in this very structured, ordered society of Britain in the 21st century, in this little local place, morality has completely broken down and people don't have the moral framework in which to operate. Similarly, in these wild places, you often find yourself in a situation where you think, well, here's a guy, he could just kill me. Or this group of people could just kill me and my friends and steal everything we have, and they would never be punished and they would never be caught. And yet, they don't do that. it's in a way it's much more striking and noticeable and extraordinary the way in which in these situations of absolute chaos people do cling to and seek out the idea of morality than it is in the apparently normal places where these pockets of aberration persist.
The People's Act of Love has been published, or is shortly to be published, in no less than 22 languages, and a Czech translation is currently being prepared. This is apt, not just because of the Czech subject matter, but also because James Meek spent time in the Czech Republic while he was writing the book, staying in an isolated cottage belonging to friends in a northeastern corner of the Czech Republic.
I lived there in this little cottage, and to begin with, it didn't even have running water. I stoked up the stove, and I cycled to the shops to get my food, and went into the local pubs for my beer. It was a very good environment for me.
The People's Act of Love, by James Meek, was published in the United Kingdom in 2005 by Canongate Books. That's all for today from Radio Prague, from me, David Vaughan, and all of us here. Goodbye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, onde courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.